Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
What's a vortex cannon?
Oh my God.
I don't know what I was writing in that sentence. I didn't even finish it.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine based right here in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk about the Doc Utah Festival, and we also talk about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Obviously, film festivals are a big deal here in Utah, and Doc Utah is one of the coolest ones. It's based down in southern Utah, held in several cities around the area. It was first formed in September 2010 and was working with Dixie State University to present documentary films, most prominently featured in outdoor venues that show off the natural Red Rock landscape of the area. 2013 will mark the festival's fourth year and will feature over 50 submitted films, over 20 student films, and several free seminars for people to attend. Slug writer Ben Trendelman sat down with festival organizer Lonnie Peruri to talk about this year's events.
Tell me about the festival and how it came to be.
Okay, so a few years ago, we have an instructor at the college, Phil Tuckett. He runs the film program at Dixie State University in St. George, and he decided he wanted to do a film festival. So we started a film festival, and he's actually a filmmaker. He used to work at NFL Films, and he was vice president of NFL Films for 38 years. He has 30 Emmys, and we just started doing this film festival, and here
Excellent.
We are 4 years later.
Yeah, and Phil has quite the resume there too.
Yes.
Was there a particular reason that you chose to go with a documentary film festival versus the alternative of having fiction and everything like that?
Or? Well, he is a documentary filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Because we are an institution, an educational institution, documentary films have an educational aspect to them. And so it just made sense. And he also has a documentary film class on the university. And so we're trying to create an academic initiative along with the festival.
So how are the films chosen and where do they come from?
It's an international documentary film festival, so they come from all over the world. This year we have submissions from about 42 different countries. They come in, we open for selections in December, and then we're open until the middle of May. So what we do is have volunteers from the community, and they screen the films. This year we had 42 teams, and there's roughly from 4 to 8 people on each team, and it's kind of a screening party. When they get together, they do wine and cheese or pizza or popcorn or whatever they want to do, but they're screening films, and each film is screened at least 3 times by 3 different teams, and it's rated. And then based on the ratings, the films that are rated higher are watched by the 3 directors of the festival. Phil actually is the artistic director, so he watches every film that comes in. So wow. He watched more than 350 films this year. Good or bad, great or not so great, he watches them all. And then we choose based on what the screeners select, and they do a really good job, and they're getting really good at it.
Excellent.
Yeah, we really try to involve the community in it, and it works out really well.
That's great. So was it this year that there were roughly 300 films that were submitted for it?
354, actually.
Okay, and how many of those made the cut?
57.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, that's a good lineup. I attended last year. I had a great pleasure in doing so and was pleasantly surprised at the selection of documentaries being screened. I was once again pleasantly surprised at the diversity and the increase in the number of films being screened this year. How do you see the Doc Utah Film Festival continuing to expand over the years?
It continues to expand because we're getting more and more recognition. So, like this year, we have 2 films in the festival that we know of right now that have been picked up by CNN and PBS. We're getting recognition. The filmmakers in the world, in the industry, they're passing the word around and letting them know that Doc Utah is a pretty big deal and you should be a part of it. We also have film critics that come to the festival and screen the films, and then they go back and write about them. So we're getting some recognition. Last year, we actually were voted by PBS as the number 1 documentary film festival, small town film festival in the nation. So mm-hmm. that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, definitely. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
One of the best experiences I had at the festival last year was being able to have candid conversations with the filmmakers. Do you think it's possible to maintain this laid-back atmosphere as the festival grows?
Definitely, because documentary filmmakers, they don't see themselves as celebrities. Mm-hmm. They all have a passion for the subject of their film. And it's usually some really important issue or just some person who, you know, like this year we have a film called The Keymaster and he just is a flute maker and it's a great film. And they just wanted to make a film about this really cool guy that makes flutes. So it's not about the celebrity status. It's just about the subject of their film. And they're just really passionate about it. And so they're not there to say, look at me, I'm mm-hmm. cool. It's more about, look at my film.
Yeah.
It's cool. And I, you know, they're really laid back people. The filmmaker that won last year, he won two awards. And he said that he is really grateful for DocuTalk because he feels like he's graduated from the little kid table to the adult table. Because we treat all of our filmmakers like celebrities and they're really humble about it mm-hmm. and really gracious because they just don't feel like they are. They're just doing what they love to do. So
exactly. And that was the sense I got in being able to talk to those guys, was that they were just grateful to have the opportunity to have a candid audience, people that were interested in what they had to say. Mm-hmm. And what are the standout films that you're excited to see screen this year?
Oh dear. People keep asking me that. They're like, one film, which film should I go to? I'm like, I can't tell you one. Got all of them.
Yeah, there are 50. So
yeah. So the really great films, there's one film called Swingman, and it's a film about a firefighter. He was a firefighter. He was actually the first black firefighter in the state of Utah. And this was back in the 70s, I believe. And then he moved to Texas and he was in a cycling accident and he's now paraplegic. And he lives in Fort Worth. And when he found out that the film was actually accepted to DocuTalk, he decided to come. So the filmmaker says he never travels because it's so difficult for him to travel. So he's coming to the festival because of the Utah connection. He's hoping that some of these firefighters are going to be there and, you know, the old guys that he used to fight fires with. And I hope so, too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do my best to get in touch with them. Another film we have is called Storm Soldiers, which is about linesmen who pull the electricity from the, you know, all across the nation so that we have electricity to do what we're doing right now. So that film is excellent film. A film called Musicwood about the trees in Alaska that are being clear cut. And those trees are used to create acoustic guitars. And without the trees, they can't make this one certain kind of guitar.
Wow.
So Slug Magazine is actually a sponsor of that event. And following that event, Park City Television is going to record a broadcast of Mountain Views. And we're going to do an acoustic guitar concert after that. There's that. There's one called Valentine Road that has an LGBT flair to it.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. An Ordinary Hero mm-hmm. that has a woman who back in the 50s, she's a white woman and she fought for civil rights and suffered just as much as the black people did. And they actually live in Lehigh, the filmmaker and his mother, who is the subject of the film, live in Lehigh. So they'll be at the festival. Oh my goodness, I could just go on.
Uh-huh.
You just have to check it out.
That's great though. I mean, and that was last year when I was at the screenings last year, I was really impressed that there were no bad films that I saw. I was really impressed with everything that was screened. And so kudos to the judges who were going through and filtering everything out because they did a fantastic job in bringing some amazing films to allow people to enjoy. So I was very pleased with that. So Dixie University puts on the festival. How do you feel that Dixie's influence shapes the festival in comparison to other film festivals?
I think the faculty and staff, the administration, they just kind of leave us alone and let us do what we mm-hmm. want. And, you know, definitely take into consideration the what the students might be interested in and our community as well. So they influence the academic aspect of the festival. So we have seminars and panels that we do every day of the festival from 1 to 4. So the filmmakers come in and they present their, you know, their filmmaking techniques and they They have Q&A discussions, and so we have that academic component that happens every day of the festival. And then this year we have the Utah Film Commission that's actually presenting a portion of the seminars on Friday. So with Dixie State involved, we are able to create that academic component, including if anyone is interested, they're able to also do a credit. So you can get one credit for attending Doc Utah.
Nice. That's excellent. That's
the other thing we're doing this year is scholarships. So students can attend the films, and then they're actually entering a drawing, and then they receive a scholarship if they win.
So, nice. Yeah. That's fantastic. So how else are students at Dixie able to get involved in the festival?
There's volunteer opportunities. Every event needs tons of volunteers, so we've got those opportunities available. The films, when we're finished with them at the festivals, we ask the filmmakers to give us permission for public screening rights, and that some of them are actually housed in the library at the university. And so the instructors can use them for extra credit possibilities for, you know, for their classroom curriculums, or the students can just go check them out and watch them whenever they want to. So we also have a film club on campus, and then we have the documentary film class where the students are making films. So lots of ways to get involved.
And some of those students have films that are screened at the festival, correct? Mm-hmm.
They do.
Excellent. Yeah, and those were great last year as well. So that's something to look forward to. How about other community workshops? What other opportunities are there for community members to be involved in the festival?
This year, we're actually doing an after-school workshop. We're introducing that this year. So after the festival, that's actually going to start, and people can get their young children involved in making films. And so we'll do the after-school workshops in the fall, and then again in the what we call spring semester at Dixie, which is weird to me because it starts in January. I don't know why they call it spring, but it's spring apparently in January.
Great.
And then we're going to have like a high school mini Doc Utah festival in April next year, where the community can be part of that and attend that. And then the community is doing the screenings. That's the dog.
There's a dog in here. So when is the festival and how can I get my tickets?
It is September 3rd through the 7th. We start Tuesday night. It's a in the St. George Town Square with an outdoor event. We're actually doing a Native American powwow.
All right.
Tickets are available online right now, pre-purchase of the all-event pass. So we have an all-event pass for $20, and it covers everything that's happening throughout the festival. And if you have an all-event pass, you can go to everything. So all the parties, all the films, everything, seminars, everything's available. And then each day of the festivals, there's a $5 ticket pass. And the pass is good for all day at any venue. It's just $5. So you can watch films from 4 to 10 every day of the festival. At the Eccles Fine Arts Center on the campus of Dixie State University, there's 4 theaters we're going to have in the building this year. So it'll be really great.
Doc Utah will run from September 3rd to September 7th, playing in the southwestern corner of Utah between Zion National Park and Grand Canyon National Park. Films and events will be held in Kanab, Springdale, and St. George. For more information on the festival itself, visit them online at docutah.com. Michael Gross and the Statuettes are a three-piece indie rock band from right here in Salt Lake City. They originally formed in 2008 and have had a bit of a rotating lineup. They currently consist of Michael Gross, Jimmy Kelly, and Ben Johnson. The band have released several albums and EPs through the years, most recently the 2012 full-length Sunset Beach. Earlier this month, the band released a brand new standalone single called Crystal Ball, and we're going to play that for you right now.
Ahead of me, so I won't be afraid.
download the new single and get more information on the band, visit them online at michaelgrossmusic.com. Granary Row is the site of a cool little scene that's been happening in Salt Lake City this summer, and it's extending into November. It's down there right outside Kilby Court along 7th South between 3rd and 4th West. It's sort of an impromptu market and bar area set up using old shipping containers. There's a beer garden, there's little shops and art galleries all along the way. Lots of cool stuff to check out. Definitely worth your while to stop by and also to listen to this great interview with one of the Granary's founders, Christian Harrison, done by Slug writer Alex Springer.
As an entity, how did it get started? And like, did you see a niche that needed to be filled or anything?
So
like that?
Kentland's initiative has been in the Granary District, which is the larger, you know, family of neighborhoods there. We've been in the Granary District for 4 years. Some folks might remember the first annual block party we had 3 years ago. 1,200 people showed up. The mayor was out. We had one of those Gandhi dancers, which is the railroad cars that you can push to move. A little sign on it that said future streetcar. We entered the neighborhood 4 years ago, and we've been there ever since, doing small events to get people to talk about the neighborhood, but also to bring together a core group of people that are interested in the neighborhood's future. Then last May, we held a 7-day long workshop, and 500 people showed up, and we talked about the future of the neighborhood, put together a workbook of some 30 years worth of projects. And project A number one was Granary Row. It came out of a profound need for community space in a neighborhood that has none. So the neighborhood said, we want community space, we want, you know, we want some more vendors in the area, some more, you know, restaurants, we want more amenities. And so it took about 8 months to plan, pay for, permit, and program. And on June 1st, we had a soft opening, and on June 15th, we had our grand opening.
To kind of set it up for people who haven't been there, it's kind of a cool layout. You've got these big kind of freight shipping boxes.
Shipping containers.
Shipping containers. And you've got, like, vendors and restaurants,
yeah,
things
so
like that.
Let me give a lay of the land. Yeah. So it's on 7th South, right next to Picture Line. So if you've ever taken a picture in Utah, you probably know Picture Line. It's right next door to Picture Line. On 7th South, between 300 West and 400 West, so 19,000 square feet in the middle of the road. We don't close the road. There's traffic going both ways on either side of us, but we're in the middle of the road. We have food carts and food trucks, a beer garden that's hosted by Uinta. We have retailers, small local retailers. We have a handful of weekend stalls for folks that, you know, the kind of vendors you might see at a farmer's market. And we have every night, so we're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 6 to 11 p.m. now through November 2nd. And every night at 8 on the big stage, which we lovingly call the Temple of Zool, we have stage shows every night at 8. Thursday nights, Spoken Word, which is run by our friends at The Porch in Provo. So they come up and do spoken word. And then Fridays and Saturdays, it's music.
Great. And I had the opportunity to check it out. And it's really, it's just a cool vibe down there that we saw there's a sort of a truck that had been converted into like sort of an art gallery.
Yes.
There's some pet adoption going on. And then we were kind of there right as, I don't remember who the artist was, but right as she was preparing. So it's really cool, just a cool vibe to kind of go get a beer, get some food, and just spend...
Yeah, it's really funny, because so we've got some great retailers. Humane Society has an adoption center there. We've saved 15 lives. We had this poster up that says, you know, save a life, grab a beer. You know, some other great retailers, including like V-Line, that does handcrafted climbing gear, and Diabolical Records, where you can get vinyl records, and a couple great t-shirt art shops, including Salt City Clothing and Copper Palette. We've got, you know, Ugar, which is a men's clothing line that's inspired by, you know, European street fashion. Some great, great folks. And if I missed anybody, God forgive me. and then the food. And there is a great vibe. In fact, you know, one of the great things is As people talk, I'm there every night, and I walk the length of the event many, many, many times. I hear people saying things like, "Oh man, it feels like New York," or "It feels like Portland," or you know, and I'm like, "No." I don't actually say this, but in my head, I'm like, "No, it doesn't," because in New York you deal with New Yorkers, and in Portland you'd deal with the crazy folks from Portland, but this is 100% Salt Lake. It's just the best of what Salt Lake has to offer. And you're surrounded with the amazing people that live in Salt Lake. And there's nothing quite like grabbing a beer in the middle of the street under the stars. It's a great experience, and it's unique to Utah. Because Utah has, you know, this great partnering vibe. We do things different here.
Now, what was it about that location, that 700 South location? Was there sort of a game plan going into that, or was it just that was the right place at the right time? Did you have a game plan picking that location?
So 7th South was important because, first of all, we had, you know, really good relationships with many of the folks on that street. The Granary District, like many of the neighborhoods in this city, about 30% of their land area is street. So 100 acres in Granary District, 30 of those acres, which is just mind-blowing, is paved street. So there's lots of space in the Granary District for us to have done this. But 7th South, you know, is a bike highway. Anybody who bikes knows that, you know, come down, you hop on 7th South, you zip over to 6th West, and then you hooky up into downtown and miss all those awful streets, 5th, 6th, South.
Right.
So we wanted to be on the bike highway, and we also wanted to be near businesses that we've known. And let's face it, our very first block party was right around the corner, 400 feet away. And we fell in love with the neighborhood.
And it is a really cool, I think that area, because right there by Kilby Court and everything, I think it's a cool part of Salt Lake. It's often overlooked, I think. But.
Yeah, and that's part of its charm. It's mm-hmm. a little quiet. We hope that it stays a little quiet, although in talking to folks, it's interesting. In talking to folks about the neighborhood, one of the things that comes up from time to time is, you know, we want it to stay just the way it is. But there's no recipe for that. There's no recipe for staying the same. In the next 15 years, we're expecting 300,000 more people to live in the valley. And in the next, by 2050, we're looking at adding 1.2 million extra people. That's a lot of people. And in that time, the neighborhoods that are quiet or out of the way, especially like, you know, especially Granary District, which is downtown adjacent, is going to feel a great deal of pressure to develop and develop fast and develop big. So we're there hoping that to gain enough inertia, to gain enough momentum, so that the neighborhood's vision of its future is the vision that comes out on the other end.
How can local vendors or retailers and musicians get in touch with you? I know you're going till about Thanksgiving for this year.
November 2nd.
November 2nd, okay.
Yes, so our last bash is going to be Halloween weekend.
Cool.
So we're filled up on storefront folks, and that's the shopping containers. But vendors who want to use the weekend stalls, they can call me, 801-550-9672. Again, that's 801-550-9672. Call me and we can get you into a stall. It's $50 a weekend, 3 days, or, you know, 2 days or 1 day, whatever part of the weekend you want to use.
Cool.
Same thing with artists. We're continuing to book. We're about half of our acts have been booked now through the end of the season, so we still have openings. We're especially looking for smaller groups that can do the, you know, busking style music, you know, mm-hmm. under 70 decibels, because those folks can fill in after the main stage show is over, from 10 to 11. And artists, same thing. Give me a call.
Cool. That's awesome. You talked a little bit about there's kind of going to be a Halloween event. What can you tell us about between now and sort of that end of the run blowout?
So Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, they're the staple. And then we've got several events that we punctuate the season with. One of them that we're really excited about is a bacon fest.
Oh,
all
cool.
All of our food vendors are going to have bacon-themed items.
I'm going to check that one out.
And then we're finalizing the name. It's right now, we're just calling it the Better Than Etsy Fest. And Salt Lake City Etsy crafters and Etsy storefront owners are being invited down to Granary Row to do their thing, which is going to be really fun. And then there are some other events that are having their closing parties with us.
The Granary Row scene happens every Thursday through Saturday through November 15th. It's located at 336 West, 700 South, right next to Picture Line in Kilby Court. You can get more information at granaryrow.org or search for them on Facebook.
Gina Backauer, Plan B,
Pygmalion, RDT, Ryrie Woodbury, and SB Dance come together to offer you 30 free performances and workshops and one paid variety show. The Rose Exposed, exposing you to the Rose Wagner. August 30th and 31st. Details and tickets at roseexposed.org.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week of August 27th into September 2nd. Yes, that's right. We have jumped forward into September. Unbelievable. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com every damn day. Check out the events. There's always new stuff being added. Always new events of worthwhile for you to check out. When I looked at this week, I found lots of goodies. Starting on Tuesday, August 27th, when the Moondoggies arrive. Great alt-country band playing along with Hollering Pines and David Williams. They're at the Urban Lounge, and I am beseeching all of you, Salt Lakers and Utahns alike. The Moondoggies have been to town several times, never drawn a great crowd because they always play on some squirrely night of the week, like this Tuesday, August 27th. Well worthwhile. I saw them in Chicago a couple years ago. Great band. I've seen them a few times here. Definitely worth your while. Lots of free stuff on their website if you want to check out their music. The same night, up at Red Butte Garden, another kind of bluesy bass show. George Thorogood and the Delta Wear Destroyers and Buddy Guy joining forces for a co-headlining show. Wednesday, August 28th, talk about some awesome live music. Charles Bradley is headlining at the Stateroom. He put on a legendary performance last year. This guy is old-time soul. He does work on stage. Amazing show. Thursday, August 29th, the former Twilight Concert Series headliner, the Chick Chick Chick, that's your 3-exclamation point band, people. They're playing with the Beachmen at Urban Lounge. That should be a lot of fun in such a small environment. Meantime, over across town, back at the Twilight Concert Series at Pioneer Park, Empire of the Sun, highly theatrical, pretty incredible clips I've seen online. They sound like a great live band. Red Butte Garden that same night, Thursday, August 29th, Wayne Shorter Quartet. Wayne Shorter is a jazz legend. He's bringing some amazing musicians with him. That should be quite the show. Friday, August 30th, it's the Rose Exposed at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. That's a night where you can check out all the different arts groups that put on performances, whether it be plays, dance, ballet, all kinds of stuff at the Rose. Great way to check out a lot of different local arts groups in one shot. Saturday, August 31st, Goody Mob, featuring CeeLo Green, his old hip-hop crew from Atlanta. They're headlining up at Park City Live. That should be a lot of fun. Sunday, September 1st, Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. A great time live every time I've seen them. They're doing a free show up at Snow Basin up outside Ogden. And then on Monday, September 2nd, that is Labor Day, people, so you'll all have it off from work and school, hopefully. The Rockstar Energy Drink Festival features a lot of oldies but goodies. Alice in Chains, Jane's Addiction, along with younger groups like Danko Jones, who are going to kick everyone's ass on the bill. That should be a good time. That's out of Dusauna Amphitheater in West Valley City. Once again, that's your weekly daily calendar for August 27th to September 2nd. If you want to submit your own events to our calendar, just go to slugmag.com. That's free for you to do. And for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality links to your content on the calendar. Andrew Goldring is a guitarist and lead singer from Salt Lake City, and the boy is prolific as hell. He releases solo work, he's a member of bands like Your Meteor and Golden Sun. His last full-blown solo release was an EP titled Dark City Daylight back in November of 2011. Now he's back on the solo tip. He's releasing a brand new EP called Forgotten Harvest that came out this summer back in June. We're going to play a song from that new one. This is called Rolling Tree.
We'll be right back.
To download the new album and to get more information on Goldring and his various projects, visit him online at andrewgoldring.com. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping reduce the loss of life from suicide. They do that by investing in research and education, and they expand assistance to those in need. In recent months, the Utah chapter has been making headway to bring more attention to the issue rather than sweeping it under the rug. They've visited schools all over the state, wherever they are needed, holding walks out, such as the Out of the Darkness in Salt Lake City and St. George, and helping bring more awareness to the issue at various public events. Slug writer John Ford sat down with Jeremy Schooley of the Utah chapter to talk about their work.
Now, to start off with, Jeremy, what's your role within the foundation?
I'm a board member, also a field advocate, which entails pretty much emailing Senate representatives, that kind of thing. I went to D.C. for that, got to meet with the health legislative assistants for pretty much all of Utah's representatives in Congress and Senate, all that kind of good stuff. It was fun.
Nice. Now, how did you first get involved with the organization?
I lost my mom to suicide in 2011, July 13th. Kind of spent about a year not really knowing what to do, not really knowing who to talk to, because, I mean, most people, when they listen, they're only waiting for their turn to talk. So I went to the Out of the Darkness walk last September, and that was the first time I'd heard about anything like this. Got involved with the Field Advocate Program, went to the International Survivors of Suicide Day that was in November. That was when I really got more into the efforts locally trying to make a difference.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm glad that you've been able to turn this into a really good thing, so that's great.
And me as well.
The name is kind of self-evident, but tell us what the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention does.
Most of it's just raising awareness, you know, so we can make sure that people do realize that it's a problem. Also, a lot of the funding goes towards research for mental illness, all that kind of good stuff, and how people that don't realize that they have mental illness problems can be diagnosed and help prevent any suicide attempts.
Is there anything in Utah specifically that's kind of going on?
From a research standpoint, no. I mean, like the donations we get locally, we get 50% of it. Most of that goes towards helping fund educations and for suicide prevention in schools. We have Taryn Aiken, who's the chairperson of the board in Utah, that she goes and presents to a lot of schools, districts, and trying to make people realize that, you know, school kids are suffering from this problem.
Well, I know just this year alone, I live up in Davis County, and I've heard about several different cases. So.
Yeah, I think there's over 40 this year.
Yeah, it's far higher than it should be. Now, statistically, do you know how often this is happening nationwide and here in Utah?
In Utah, it's a little over 400 people on average die by suicide every year, and there's a little over 4,000 attempts. Nationally, it's a lot higher, obviously. I don't know the exact numbers, but I mean, and the last time that they were actually able to record it was 2 years ago in 2000, or 3 years ago in 2010. So it's kind of a number that will probably go up.
Unfortunately.
And that's a part of what I was in D.C. for, was for the National Violent Death Recording System. Mm-hmm. And that's, so far, 8 states have it, Utah being one of them. But they needed a lot more funding in order to get every state up to par with it so that can actually be able to have a better understanding of the numbers that are actually happening out there.
For people who haven't been directly affected by suicide, why should they support the AFSP? Like, what makes this important that they should be contributing?
Most people don't even know that we're around. And I mean, most people kind of don't even realize that there is a problem. And it affects pretty much everybody. I mean, in some way, shape, or form. I mean, sometime in life, friends, family, all that kind of good stuff. But I mean, what it is, it's not just about suicide. I mean, some of the funding is going to go towards mental illness research, which affects a lot of people as well that don't even know. And that would help out a lot of people. That's pretty much mental illness that causes at least 90% of all suicide attempts.
Now, what can you tell us about, like, as far as different things like mental illness, not mental illness, but on things like inoperable cancer or diseases of the brain where, you know, the person knows they're going to die and it's going to be horrible. Where do they have a stance on people choosing suicide in those situations?
Not that I know of. I mean, it's kind of hard to take a stance on that. I mean, I don't really have one. Not that I can really say that I do anyway. You know, I know it's a terrible thing, that terminal cancer, all that kind of stuff. But people do what they got to do with that kind of thing. And I mean, I don't agree with it, but I don't agree with them being in pain either.
Let's talk a little bit about the Out of Darkness walks. We've got two coming up in Utah. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
The first one in Salt Lake is September 14th. Trying to raise money for that, trying to get sponsors, advertising out there, anybody that wants to help, even participate. I mean, you can go on afsp.org, register, sign up your own team. If you're affected by suicide, or if one of your friends has a team, you can be on theirs. Just trying to raise money for research on the topic. The second one is October 19th in St. George, which happens to be a bit smaller than the one that goes on in Salt Lake, but it's gaining more and more popularity as it goes on.
I noticed the Salt Lake one has a goal of 80,000 and the St. George one has a goal of 15,000.
Right.
So,
big difference.
But
I mean,
still,
we're trying to get over the 80,000 in Salt Lake, and we're pretty confident that we can do so.
Now, who can people contact if they're interested in getting involved with those Out of Darkness walks?
They can contact afsp.org. If you just go to, you know, you can look for your local chapter. You can click on their website, and it'll send you right to the AFSP Utah's page, where the chairman, Taryn Aiken, has her email on there. You can talk to her. Don't really have like an office kind of setting thing. We're all volunteers. We all have 9-to-5 jobs. Don't really have much of a real estate kind of thing. So that's all we do is go by Taryn's email, Facebook. We're on there. That's another good way.
For more information on the Utah group, visit them online at afsputahchapter.com. As always, thank you for listening to Soundways from the Underground, and for all things Slug Magazine, visit us online at slugmag.com. Next week, we're going to have resident film expert Jimmy Martin in the studio to talk about all the awesome fall movies coming up. We'd like to hear from you what your favorite fall flicks are coming out, or what you're most interested in hearing about. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com, or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just might play your question and or suggestion on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer, Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan. Technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up next week. We'll be talking about all the latest local beer news from Mike Riedel. We'll have Jimmy Martin in to talk about those fall movies. Thank you very much.